Welcome to the Love Positivism podcast. I'm Shireen Oberg, and I'm a yoga teacher and author devoted to the path of healing and heart-based living. And I want to help you to step into what you truly are and to your highest potential. On this podcast, I share with you tools and insights to help you move ever forward on your spiritual and healing path. With guests from all over the world, from different wisdom traditions, I wish to create a web of loving energy that permeates the whole world to create more love and peace. You can connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube for more guidance and love.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. I am very excited to be here with a dear friend and such a wealth of wisdom, Johanna Kujawa. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Shireen. It's good to see you again. We haven't spoken for over a year because last time we spoke, I just had my book published, The Other Goddess, Mary Magdalene and the Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge. And we're speaking mostly about Mary Magdalene and the Gospel of Mary Magdalene and the goddesses associated with her, which, you know, the book focuses on. And you know, it's such a fascinating topic, but we actually didn't really go much beyond that. And now, like, the book was published now nearly 2 years ago, and I had several workshops on invoking the magic of Eros and goddesses of Eros, which were huge fun. And also I realized that we all carry this kind of almost like an erotic wound. Know, like shaming of the body or shaming of our sexuality, and that we absolutely need both women and men, but I'm mostly working with women, although men love my work. They said, yes, women have to explore this. It's really interesting, you know, how men are actually very supportive of this, you know, how we can heal our own errors in our own lives, because the book was more like a research, but it was like a, you know, popular book that everybody can read. It's not an academic book, but it was more about the lineage of goddesses, you know, that led to Mary Magdalene and her as a maybe last example that I know of this kind of goddesses of Eros. And I was also talking about this division, which actually exists in most religions, which is between the kind of divine mother, which is erotically untouched. You know what I mean? That she's completely asexual. And then there is always this kind of nemesis to this goddess, which is, for example, in Catholicism, there's like Mother Mary or Virgin Mary, and there's Mary Magdalene. And that's why I called my book The Other Goddess, because I meant Mary Magdalene and the lineage of goddesses that she represents. Mm-hmm. So I looked into the whole, you know, lineage of goddesses, both Western, starting with Sumer, you know, and it's similar to your heritage, you know, Nimna, Inanna, Ishtar, Hathor, Isis, Mary Magdalene. But I also looked into Hindu goddesses, which are associated with her, which is Kali, which is Sundari, which is Radha, and so on, you know. So this was set up this way. And then, you know, people started to ask me questions, and I also discussed the Gospel of Mary Magdalene in some detail, and Mary Magdalene as the apostle, basically, right? The most advanced disciple of Jesus and the female equivalent of Jesus. But, you know, as I was doing this, people were reaching out to me saying, you know, like about, they wanted to know how can we practice, you know, this thing in our lives, you know, because you talk about Eros and how women should claim their Eros and heal their Eros as well. And, but, you know, give us some tools. You know, like, how can we make it actually practical? Because I forgot to mention that the whole book is really about spirituality and sexuality. But there is a certain social construct, I would say, in our society, in all societies, since we remember, since the beginnings of, you know, patriarchy, really, which is all civilization that we know, is about, you know, demeaning sexuality, you know, and shaming sexuality, and also shaming sexual women. You know, our women's relationship with sexuality, and that it created a very difficult gap in relationships between women and men, because men also have this kind of a split in their minds between you know, the pure girl and the sexy girl, you know, like they cannot somehow meet, or one is smart and one is beautiful, you know, and parents do it to us. Like I know two sisters, you know, like series of sisters, you know, who one is supposed to be beautiful, one is supposed to be smart. Like somehow these two things in a current society cannot meet, which is nonsense. So I said, we have archetypes present in our mythology, in another spirituality, Asian spirituality of different religions, but these three qualities, you know, pure, sexual, and wise, can meet. And I was also talking about the fact that although motherhood is such a beautiful role, it's not necessarily the only role for a woman. Because sometimes some women choose not to have children, like I did, and some women cannot have children. And then there's like a stigma, you know, that women judge themselves according to this. And I said, no, we have beautiful archetypes of goddesses that, you know, and priestesses that perhaps made other choices as well, right? So this was what the book was about. But then we have this workshop that, you know, I was thinking, how can we actually make it fun so people can improve our relationships, can get in touch with our sexuality, you know, and I make also a division between sexuality and eros, because sexuality has been so demeaned by the mass media and, you know, and in our society that I prefer the word like erotic, which is basically, for me, sexuality and spirituality are really one and the same. And if sexuality is taken to a highest level, which is also considered in Tantra and in some, you know, good relationships, you know, when two conscious human beings enter relationships, and in many esoteric traditions, then I would call it erotic, which means spirit is naturally included in them. So there's no another division, like this is sexual and this is spiritual. And because I believe that this is extremely damaging to human psyche, you know, this kind of distinction. And imagine what it also does to women, right? Like you, I mean, we are sexual beings. Everybody's a sexual being. And just thinking like, you know, this is bad somehow, or it is good, but in a bad way. And it's just so confusing, you know, because on the one hand, you're supposed to be sexy, because it's really about the kind of traditional gaze, right, of a man. You're supposed to be attractive and sexy, but, you know, but you really cannot. Somebody else defines what it is for a woman. Right, to be desirable and to be sexy. So that's why, you know, we started with this workshop. I work now with the creators of the Magical Egypt series, and you know, and edit also a few courses with them. This is one, you know, invoking the magic of Eros. So if you want, maybe we can launch into this, you know, like, because I already really started, you know, hopefully didn't already speak too much about it. So do you have any questions, or should I just launch into it?
I just want to add that you are an academic, but have embodied a lot. Like we could read in your book your experience as well. Like your, you know, in the book you share your journey and how you got into more tantric work and all of that. So it's like you have this mix of embodied experience, and also you are like goddess Sarasvati of knowledge and wisdom. So there's so much that you embody, I think. And I really loved the way you pulled that into that whole lineage of priestesses and goddesses that you did. And I think that what you're speaking to is so important. And for me, like just hearing like invoking Eros, or like the magic of Eros, and you describe it a little bit in the book, I remember. Maybe, yeah, we can start from there and get into like what it means, because also like desire is the foundation of everything that is created somehow. But yeah, just share with us, and also maybe like how you got into it from the beginning, because I remember in the book you found a teacher in Australia, right, that you worked with. It would be interesting to hear like the journey here as well.
So thank you for directing me like that, because yes, so just for people who didn't read the book, it is that, you know, I am a PhD, I'm an academic, and I'm still working academic, and this book, it was kind of my act of of like personal rebellion, but also of claiming my own narrative. You know, that's why I also didn't want to write an academic book. I wanted to write a book that, you know, and everybody can read. So I, in this book, I also share my own experiences, how I, you know, including my tantric experience that I studied tantric work with a translator of this work, you know, also a PhD in Sanskrit, the Kula ritual of a classical Indian tantra. And when I studied this work with one Swami, one yoga teacher, the translator who was actually a Catholic priest, you know, but a Sanskrit scholar, and one Tibetan Buddhist monk, and I'm the only woman, you know, but it was purely scholarly, you know, a spiritual reading of this. And then I actually, none of these men, I had this experience of awakening of Kundalini energy through a sexual encounter, right? So I describe it in the book, you know, because it's a very powerful experience of Kundalini energy actually feeling it physically in your body, you know, not only energetically and physically in my body. So this is also in this book. So that's a very important part, you know, of that journey. And the reason actually why I wrote this book, it is because I'm a little bit more aware actually why I wrote this book, because as you know, the process is just a very organic process, writing, and then people ask you about it when you're writing it or when you have just finished it, and you really don't have like meta language, right, to speak about it, because it's just you know, right, like you just finished it. But now, nearly 2 years after the publication, I feel like I now understand where I wrote it, and I think it was about me, and I really advise it to everybody, but especially women, although, you know, as I said, 50% of the readers of the book are men, which is a great joy for me, because obviously they relate to, you know, what we talk about, is that, you know, we have to claim our own narrative, because I could, you know, write about, because this book is really about my life, because I really call myself an author, scholar, spiritual detective. So this is a book written really, yes, I'm an author, yes, I'm a scholar, but this is really written by a spiritual detective. And, you know, so my spiritual journey and my erotic journey, you know, through the eyes of a spiritual detective. And instead of allowing other people to tell us about our lives and how we should claim our lives, you know, I decided, no, this is how I claim my life. You know, this is my story, you know, these are my decisions, and, you know, this is my journey, and it also allowed me to appreciate my journey, and this is what I want everybody, you know, to appreciate their own spiritual journeys, because it is such a ride, you know. I want everybody to, you know, when we are older, or, you know, like 80 or something, look back at their lives and say, like, wow. That was totally worth it. You know, I made some mistakes, and it's completely cool because I lived by my own choices, you know, and then in a book, by writing a book, you know, you can claim these choices, you know, none of us is a victim. You know, I really don't like this in a lot of a feminist and also in psychology. And I'm not saying that there are no victims, there are victims, but we, like, you know, claim your life, you know, like claim your life. You know, and the way it was given to you, it was meant to be this way. And so this is also partially, you know, what the book is about, you know, and the workshops that I, and the goddesses that I want to talk about right now, also, how can we claim the part in ourselves, which is, you know, the sexual part in here, which is also a very wise part, which is also a very spiritual part, you know, on our own terms. And where we have different archetypes, we have different mythological examples open to us, and they are not just some kind of icons, they are not just something to worship. I'm not asking people to worship, although, you know, I do respect, you know, the whole priestess thing and so on, but I believe that they are existing energies, and this is my experience, especially when I had a Kundalini awakening. These are energies with whom I constantly connect, and which are available to us. And they are there for us to embody them, not to worship them. I mean, of course, some people are bhaktis or bhaktas, right? In Sanskrit, you know, worship, and it's also a way of connecting with this energy. But actually, we can embody these energies, you know, on a hopefully on the highest level, you know, on the highest notes, so to speak, right? So, and this is what I wish for everybody. And this is what I wish for every, you know, woman and a man, you know, to embody also this erotic energy on the highest note. And I think that this, that there is no spiritual evolution until we do it, because then sexuality becomes always like a shadow that is dragging us down, when in fact it's a divine force.
That brings up a question, because it's such a, I can see the lineage of when that was not true anymore, because we got so separated from it as a, we know where that came from, me and you, where that started. And it's like a long process of us of control almost, and the taking of something which it could be divine. Because when you're saying also like the bhaktas, and it's even in devotional practice and worship, it's still like when you embody that, then you're like, you are in your own inner worship of all of all of
you connect that. With that it's a way of connecting.
Exactly. And it's and it's kind of like also when you are embodying, isn't that like a divine union? Because then you're also unifying with that quality of the divine. So it's such a, I really love that, because the truth is, it's not all like traditional religions either that are in its foundation trying to suppress that, but it's like how things have been translated as well. And when it became a fact that it's better to not come in touch with it at all, it feels like, because also a lot of spiritual traditions have that self-denial and this non-embodiment. So it's like two different worlds. And then you've been in the practice and you've seen the, could it also be that we have different, just as we have different paths in life, that it could be that some are not like fully able to embody that full experience in this lifetime, but, or can we all unlock that power? Like, how have you seen it when you worked with it and with different people on it?
I think that people, everybody has access to this, but also because partially because how we're brought up, and religious, but also non-religious beliefs, you know, what happens in mass media and how sexuality, especially women with in connection with sexuality, are portrayed, which is really demeaning, you know, like I really don't like to see any sex scenes on TV, because not because, you know, I'm prude, because I'm absolutely not that, but I think they just always show it from like lowest possible level. And I know what's possible through practice, not only like as a scholarly thing, but, you know, through practice. And then not only I know that there are esoteric traditions that practice it, but I practice it myself, you know, and I had experiences like that. So it deeply saddens me, you know, like when I see like usually like some people meet and there's attraction and there's this quick sex somewhere in the kitchen, and it can be great fun, but, you know, like there is the way it is just one of many ways, you know, you can connect with someone, and then it just like smoke cigarette or, you know, like do something quite, you know, brutal or violent, and it just, this is how it ends. And there is so much more. So what I'm saying is that it is available to all of us, but it requires breaking down some beliefs, some systems of beliefs. It basically requires open-mindedness. And that's why, you know, people very often, and you in your book were talking a lot about initiation, which I really loved, you know. So this requires a form of initiation, which doesn't have to be formal initiation. I went through formal, you know, initiation, but it doesn't necessarily require formal initiation, but even like internal initiation. And the reasons why sometimes initiation, spiritual initiations are so painful, when people of sometimes say, you know, I wish it never happened to me, because now, you know, my life was in order and now it's chaos, you know, because it is simply because, you know, people sometimes have to wake up from that, you know, like a box, right? Mental box. So as long as we can get away from our mental box and open to these beautiful energies, I think this path is available for everyone. But of course, you know, not everyone needs to take it. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, like everybody has to take this path, but I'm saying that I think it is delusional, and I know that I'm controversial here, that you can completely suppress sexuality, or what is normally called sublimated, you know, which is a nice word for repression, and think that you can progress spiritually, because it will get you. And that's why, you know, lots of spiritual leaders getting into sexual problems, you know, all kinds of things in different religious institutions, you know, are being investigated and covered up, you know, all kinds of sexual misconduct, because this is what they try to do. You know, they try to completely repress it or suppress it. It's impossible. Scholar, I also studied early Christian saints. And, you know, I know that they struggle with sexuality. And when you read them, you know, some of these were completely ridiculous. Like, for example, Saint Jerome, who nearly became a pope, and he was actually translator of the Bible. He was like, you know, on a desert eating one date as a fruit, you know, per day, you know, and he was very much an aesthetic, and he said that he still had nice dreams about bare-breasted dancers, okay? So, and another saint, Saint Augustine, who is the father of a church, he said, you know, he struggled with his sexuality, and they were asking questions like, how many erections per year a man can have and still call himself a saint? So, you know, these are like, I'm talking about historical, you know, data here, right? Because they wrote about it. It's not some kind of, I didn't read it on YouTube, you know, like to watch it on YouTube. I read the letters, you know, and in Latin and so on. So suppression of sexuality as such, in the name of spiritual progression, I think is a delusion. You know, I'm not saying that people should have sex right and left. I never said it ever. I said, but we have to approach it from a completely different, much healthier way, and understand that is one way of expressing our spirituality. So there's nothing wrong with sexuality, it is how we approach it. And suppressing it, I think for ages and ages now, it has been shown that even the great religious figures couldn't do it. You know, so, and Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst, also said, you know, like, you have to look at your shadow, basically, right? And there's absolutely, and sexuality is a shadow right now, you know, the way it is portrayed, the way a very kind of fearful relationship with sexuality and confusion around sexuality, which actually now is even bigger than before, I would say. And I said, we have to approach it, you know, in a more spiritual way, not through the denial, but embracing it and take it into a higher octave.
I love that. And so much comes up for me when I'm listening to you, and it's that somehow the suppression of sexuality is also the suppression of the divine feminine, because they kind of go together. And when you're denying that, and you're only like, yeah, in patriarchal structures, it's always like, how it strange that it is the worship and the focus on the male aspect of the divine always, and how it's almost like when you suppress it, it implodes. And like you said, we have seen what it has led to, and maybe that's also the foundation to many other things that are happening, since we are so imbalanced in that yin and yang. Because if we don't accept like that the union of these different energies, it's not going to be any balance in the world, because we continue suppressing it in ourselves.
You're very correct. Yeah, you're totally correct, and it was completely hijacked. And you know, even now I'm just shocked, because like recently I listened to an interview about one of the really top scholars of Gnosticism. And he's talking about one particular Gnostic group, and he's like even much more scholarly than me, because he actually does the translations and, you know, goes to the list, you know, when I like synthesize and make, you know, bring it to, you know, the seeker, so to speak, and I want an element of practice. And you know, he sees something, and for him, everything is phallic. You know, and some people even started to say, oh, it's homoerotic. You know, like women are immediately like excluded. It's phallic, it's homoerotic. It is, you know, not there's anything wrong with it, but there's just like, it just always goes this way. And he says, you know, and the serpent, they talk about serpent, so it means it's phallic and it's homoerotic. And I said, yes, I said in the comment, but this, it says in the text, you know, but he translated, that the serpent comes from the moist, you know, which is for me, it's the womb automatically. You know what I mean? Like, so the feminine is there, like in plain sight, but they cannot see it, even modern scholars, you know, and he's not a misogynist, he's nothing, nothing, nothing. But he couldn't see it. He translated the bloody text. He said, what do you think the moist is? You know, the serpent came from the moist. It is the yoni, it is the womb. Right? And he says, well, but there is no feminine there. And I think, who, you know, because we are also brought up, and also lots of female scholars to make it, you know, right, see it this way, because we are just, our whole focus is on the masculine, especially in the terms of spirituality, you know? And it was not always like that. And even if it was, which I know it wasn't, then, you know, we have to change it, because you cannot leave 52% of population, you know, out of spiritual beliefs and, you know, identify with that, you know, phallic symbol. And then, you know, he started to speak about penises and vaginas. And I've again, like, said, like, my goodness, you know that there's a difference between vulva and vagina. You know, a regular guy, even like a scholar, they think that, you know, vaginas, you know, I'm using this, which I think is actually a horrible word, you know, in English, like just vagina is kind of, you know, but it's actually, you know, the kind of the small, I mean, missing a word now, it's like a small tunnel, it's not the right thing, where, you know, menstrual blood is coming from, but actually women's sexual organs are called vulva. And, you know, I said, how would you feel if, you know, your wife said to you, is it your penis or is it your nut? You know, it was like, you know, this kind of basic lack of knowledge. You understand? So I know I'm being controversial here because I want to make fun of this, but it is just everything is seen from this one side. And even like simple things like, you know, who actually knows that it's vulva and not vagina, both women and men, you know? So we start from very basic, and this is spiritually 100%, you know, it's only male, you know? Because, and even if the feminine is there in the first sentence, he didn't see it. He translated the text, he didn't see it, right? So it's definitely so. It's ridiculous.
It's just the continuation of this lens, the masculine lens of interpretation, which has been going on for so long. That's why it's so important to question that, and that news, like, also if you are doing something scholarly, it's a different thing to have an embodied experience, understanding something logically and then being physically embodied, because I feel like the embodiment is that divine feminine, like, it's about being and to enjoy the body as well in this life, even if it's, we don't have to have like that type of attachment as we can have that is more limiting. If we have an attachment that is like filling and a fullness, it's a different thing. But
completely, you're completely right. And in esoteric traditions, and also in esoteric traditions of Hinduism, you know, Prakriti, you know, it's actually creation. It's all the embodiment. It's actually feminine. So, and actually, this is what my next book is a lot about. You know, I just realized it. It's just in a more futuristic kind of form. Because if you just reduce, you said it very well, if you just reduce it just to logic and reasoning, you know, and no embodiment, of course we don't see feminine, even if it's like, you know, a word is there, right? Because this is meant to be embodied, and they don't even know how to embody this, you know, so this kind of, then it turns into what it was for centuries, actually, and seems to continue, you know, like, because this is a very recent scholarly interview that I watched, you know, a scholastic discussion. There's nothing about, you know, embodiment. There's nothing experiential. And only women, I notice, actually talk about experiential things. You know, even in Tantra, women talk about experiential, you know, things, you know. Sometimes men do, but then they immediately want to claim it. You know, like they reverse the order. Because in my book, I actually say that that in classical Tantra, the woman is actually the giver of awakening. Right. And now when I studied other tantric works, which are also, you know, classical Indian tantras, recently translated from Sanskrit. And, you know, it's not something that I kept somewhere in California. You know, it is we're talking about classical Indian tantra, medieval texts, you know, that say that actually the reason why they are, because somebody asked me actually why there are all of these tantric methods for men and not for women, if women are, you know, awakening givers. And in this text, it immediately says that the techniques are for men because to prepare them to receive the grace that comes from women, because women have it naturally. The men just have to respect the feminine and have to be patient also for a woman in erotic terms, for her to be able to give him this bliss that she actually possesses. You know, that's why there are some tantric techniques, you know, like for delay for men, because basically they're all about, you know, delaying ejaculation. So, and the reason why actually, because I wondered, okay, so that's true, you know, there are no techniques for women, because women just embody it. This is what the text said. And a man has to receive this grace through patience and, you know, through physical, you know, self-discipline, you know, for to receive that gift of grace from a woman.
I love that, and it ties still back to when I'm hearing this, like it's the physical embodiment of a woman is the giver of life, so it must be more that is initiating the other energy into something. So it makes total sense, and yeah, from the yogic perspective, definitely all manifested. All the manifest is the divine feminine. So I love that. And how can actually people find the workshop that you have to start working with this?
So the workshop, the live workshop we conducted in November, and I had, I think, another one in July, and they were both very popular. And so the second one, we recorded, so the recording is now available. So if you could leave a link, I send you the link, yes. You know, under the, so people can you know, participate in it. So it's like a 3-hour workshop with meditations, and I give mantras, how to invoke different energies, like the energy of Isis or Inanna, or Sundari or Kali, you know, or even Greek energies, you know, which are slightly lower energies, and I tell which energies are higher, which are lower, you know, and consequences of both, you know. So I actually give people tools for this, right? So I would encourage people, if they want to, you know, like go full on to this, you know, to read the book, and if they want something practical, to, you know, take this workshop, which is now pre-recorded workshop, right? And I guess we will leave a link at the bottom of this interview. And because some goddesses are very popular nowadays, but I feel like, for example, Isis or Inanna, but people really do not know how to connect with them, you know, and what they really symbolize, you know, in our life, and how we can call upon this energy. So this workshop actually was designed for that particular reason.
I love that. I also want to ask, like, what is an important practice for you right now to embody? Like, do you have a daily practice? Is it the mantras?
I have lots of practices. So, you know, like I wake up very early. Okay. So I wake up very early and I have a few puja tables, for example. And at each puja table is, you know, I invoke like different different affirmations. So first of all, even before I get up, I say particular affirmations, you know, for my body, for my spiritual life, for my life. Then I get up and I, you know, actually in one formal puja table that we have in our house, I actually call upon, you know, Goddess Parashakti and Shakti Kundalini. You know, actually when I'm saying it, it's flowing from me, you know, because it is such a daily practice for me and it's just so alive in me. You know what I mean? So I just stand there like that, and you know, and I call upon this energy. You know, I have a particular prayer. You know, I call upon this energy, and I don't move, but it happens very fast for me until I actually feel it moving through my body. You know, mm-hmm. So for me, it's kind of slight movement like that. You know, so I feel that it's moving through my body. So, and I also am an avid meditator, so I meditate about 1 hour per day. You know. Mm-hmm. So this is my practice, and I do mantras, you know, so I do lots of things because I schedule my life actually around it, you know, so I schedule my life around it. And in this particular workshop, you know, this woman with whom I work, who is a very talented person, you know, I started to say mantra. If you want, I can say it for your audience as well. And she says, I love it because, you know, just you can see how, you know, it is possible to embody it. And, you know, and she puts her own original music. So I'm saying this mantra for like repetitively for 5 minutes, and she put this beautiful music under, you know, so people can listen to this. So this particular mantra is for Goddess Sundari. So Goddess Sundari is actually the kind of liberated version of Goddess Kali. So I explain in the book, in the workshop, how it happened. But basically, she is Goddess Kali after she gave up all anger. And now she's always in divine bliss, and she's the awaker of bliss for others as well, you know, and also for a sexual union. So she's a deeply erotic and also spiritual goddess, because she is always like multidimensional goddess. So Goddess Sundari, and like other goddesses of Eros and wisdom and bliss, she was hijacked by traditions, because now Goddess Sundari, it's in just like beauty products. You know, everything is demeaned. Something beautiful, feminine is demeaned, like a beauty product or massage parlor. God knows what happens there, right? And so on. But it's actually, you know, she's one of the highest goddesses. And there are several mantras that you can say to her, but just let me, you know, so if you want, we can finish with this. Just demonstrate it. Om Lalita Tripura Sundari Soham. 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 Om Lalita Tripura Sundari Soham.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm sure that all the practices in the workshop will help invoke that, just hearing this. And I want to thank you so much for sharing today. And I'll make sure to put the links in the show notes. So thank you so much, Joanna.
Thank you, Sharon. Always beautiful speaking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.